Did you know that tomorrow is National Book Lovers Day? All right, maybe it's not an official holiday, maybe we just made it up, but it's as good an excuse as any to put down our smartphones, pick up a book, and not just read it, reread it. That's our topic today with our go-to literary guy, Steve Almond. He's here in the studio with us. You out there participated as well. We did a Facebook shout-out. Hundreds of listeners weighed in with the books they like to reread. Steve, you're nodding. You're not surprised. And you were here recently to tell us about one you've reread, I don't know, hundreds of times. John Williams' 1965 novel about one small life that Williams makes very big, Stoner.
Yes, over and over and over again. And I have to say, like, I love Robin and I love the show. And I now love your listeners an incredible amount because there was literally hundreds of responses. And many of them, interestingly, overlap with my little list.
Okay, so we're going to hear your list. And top of the list, as we said, John Williams' Stoner. We'll link you to that segment at hereandnow.org. But talk about rereading. Some of the people responded, well, there's so many new books to read. Why reread?
Yeah, well, I think there's an American obsession with novelty and the newest thing, the latest thing that's out. And reading, actually, Nabokov has this great quote where he says, there's no such thing as reading. It's all rereading. And what he means is that literature, by its nature, reaches deeply enough into the human experience that you go back to it over and over again. Mm. We return to them in the same way that kids return to books. We want to go back to that same place. But each time we're a different person, and so we notice different things and new things about them. Mm. And I love that idea. I think this idea of summer reading should be only new things and only sort of thrillers that are superficial because everybody's out by the pool. I think that's a really condescending view of reading. And your listeners are affirming that because they exploded with all these suggestions of books that they return to again and again because it gives them something new each time.
Well, let's hear your list first.
Absolutely.
The Lover?
Yes. The Lover by Margaret Duras is 116 pages of like unbelievably gripping prose. It's about a tempestuous affair between a French teenage girl and her older Chinese lover set in colonial Indochina. It's about memory and love and family sorrow, and the prose is startling. I just want to read a little bit because it gives you a sense of how Duras sounds. I can't really remember the days, she writes. The light of the sun blurred and annihilated all color, but the nights, I remember them. The blue was more distant than the sky, beyond all depths, covering the bounds of the world. The sky for me was the stretch of pure brilliance, crossing the blue, that cold coalescence beyond all color. Sometimes when my mother was sad, she'd order the gig and we'd drive out into the country to see the night as it was in the dry season. I had that good fortune those nights. That mother, the light fell from the sky in cataracts of pure transparency, in torrents of silence and immobility. The air was blue. You could hold it in your hand. Blue. Yes.
Okay.
And as much as it's about a love affair, it's also about love of the language and how immersed we are in our memories, especially our kind of teenage memories.
Mm. Okay. Also on your list, Cat's Eye, Margaret Atwood. Female friendship and bullying, how timely.
This is a 1988 novel that Atwood wrote that reaches so deeply into the subject of friendship and especially female friendship and gets at how, as she puts it in the book, a friend can be both lifeboat and shark all at once. They can be somebody who saves your life and in the next moment who absolutely dashes your hopes. Mm. And it follows the way in which the central character, who is an artist in her middle age, returns to Toronto where she was a teenager who was in the thrall of this kind of gang of girls, loved them dearly, was hopelessly devoted to them, and how mercilessly they bullied her, and how much that stayed with her through her entire life, affected her relationships with women and men for the rest of her life.
As it does. There's also on your list Money from Martin Amis. It's a funny book about a filmmaker in the 80s. The short story collection Birds of America, Laurie Moore.
Yeah, I love these stories. I've always loved them. And I included those two titles, Robin, because you know me, I tend to sort of choose books that gravitate toward the dark side of love, of friendship, whatever it is. These two books are both unsparing in their examinations of the dark side, and they're hilariously funny. Okay. I think people get it wrong. They think funny's the opposite of sad. Actually, funny is what we do because we're sad.
You reread Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me.
Yeah. So this is a book that's from 2015, so it's not an ancient book. And the reason I have reread it three or four times since it came out is because it is the one book in the midst of, I want to say, a sort of national climate of anxiety around race and an incredible amount of acrimony that is unbelievably eloquent and clear-eyed about race in America. It's really written in the tradition of James Baldwin, who I think is sort of the great under-recognized prophet of race in the country. Mm-hmm. And Coates is writing an epistle, basically a letter to his teenage son that documents his, it's really an autobiographical account of his growing up in Baltimore and the way in which the black male body is essentially criminalized and under threat all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not an angry book. It is deeply and painfully insightful. I want to just read you a little bit of the way that Coates writes.
Okay.
"You must resist the common urge toward the comforting narrative of divine law, toward fairy tales that imply some irrepressible justice. The enslaved were not bricks in your road, and their lives were not chapters in your redemptive history. They were people turned to fuel for the American machine." Now, a lot of people on the list actually wrote in praise of To Kill a Mockingbird. And I understood that impulse because that is a beautiful novel and a novel that suggests something quite optimistic about the role that whites can play in battling what Coates identifies quite clearly as the inevitability of white supremacy in America. And I would just commend those people who love that novel, as I do, To Kill a Mockingbird. If you haven't, or if you haven't recently, go back and read Between the World and Me. It's devastating in all the necessary ways.
Maybe read them together.
Yep.
Okay, David Foster Wallace's Consider the Lobster and Slouching Toward Bethlehem, Joan Didion. And by the way, we'll have your whole list at hearnow.org.
I'm lucky enough to teach a class to like journalists who are far better journalists than I'll ever be. And these are the first two writers that I give them, is Didion and David Foster Wallace. When we read nonfiction, what we really want is to be in the presence of a great mind and heart on the page. Simple, direct language about what preoccupies those writers, what keeps them up, what feels urgent. And Foster Wallace is one of those guys who, it doesn't matter where you send him, he was going to find the most interesting question to ask about that place. Consider the Lobster, the essay, for instance, is him going to the Maine Lobster Festival and asking a very simple question that really stops readers dead in their tracks. Is it okay for human beings to torture a live animal for their own gustatory pleasure? And I also want to say that it's a very funny and far-reaching collection of essays, even as it's taking on serious terrain.
Okay. I want to make sure that we get to the listeners. I mean, hundreds of responses, but here's a couple. Rebecca Pele-Mayer, The Grapes of Wrath. Christina Williamson, Outlander. Alexander Change, The Blue Castle. Ron DeLusky, it looks like, Time and Again from Jack Finney. What are some that jumped out at you?
What jumped out at me, Robin, was the number of people who wrote about novels. And I want to give a little list. Mm. Anne of Green Gables came up again and again. Little Women, Jane Eyre, and all of them. I chose Ruby Fruit Jungle. That's the 1973 Rita Mae Brown book about a young woman coming into her own body and her own sexuality. She's a lesbian. And it was, upon rereading, an entirely different novel from the one I read when I was 12 years old and did not understand really what it was about.
Wait, and you read that at 12?
Okay, maybe 11. You're right. You got me. Maybe 10 with certain parts underlined. But the point is, it was a revolutionary book in the sense that it just took on Rita Mae Brown's own experience. Back in 1973, it was writing about the way in which it felt forbidden for her to love who she wanted to love. It was forbidden.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that there are so many people choosing Anne of Green Gables, Little Women, Jane Eyre, this kind of book, is because it focuses, all of those books focus on female characters who are too smart and ambitious for their circumstances and who are trying to make their way in a world that criminalizes their sexuality or even more so their ambition. And that is the moment we're living in. And that's why returning to those novels is a different sort of experience, I think, than maybe when you read it when you're a teenage girl.
I think that's such a great point. I mean, part of rereading is you're a different person. I mean,
right.
As you said with Stoner,
right.
You read it as a young person and you saw one thing in it. Then you read it as a parent and you
right.
saw a completely different thing.
And I tried to choose books that feel very different. I mean, in this moment, lots of women are moving through the world and recognizing that their ambition and even their volition is being criminalized. I think that's the reason these books are on people's mind in the same way that people's anxieties about what, not just what's happening within us, but what's happening around us in the culture is resonating. And people are saying, let me go back to Kill a Mockingbird. That's a happier story, a story about a wished for sense of justice that a white lawyer takes it upon himself to feel and try to address the struggle of racial equality. I think that's the reason we return to books again and again. There's something that we haven't quite worked out, either as people or as a country, and sometimes both.
Well, speaking of which, some other listeners, Shelley Woodson here liked Man's Search for Meaning. Eileen Connolly, A Prayer for Owen Meany.
Yes.
So we would still love your suggestions on our Facebook page and at hereandnow.org. You want to know mine?
Yes, I do. Of course I do.
Annie Dillard. Pilgrim at Tinker Creek.
Oh, my gracious. Beautiful observations of the natural world. Yes. I got to throw in, because so many people chose Jane Austen, Persuasion of Pride and Prejudice. I just must say this on behalf of Jane Austen. I declare, after all, there is no enjoyment like reading. How much sooner one tires of anything than of a book. When I have a house of my own, I shall be miserable if I have not an excellent library.
We're done. Author Steve Almond. And by the way, another Annie Dillard favorite is Teaching a Stone to Talk. Jeremy, the essay, Living Like Weasels. I know how it sounds, but it's better than it sounds.
I would say I just read Blue Latitudes about Captain Cook by Tony Horowitz. I would read that again.
It was fantastic. Okay, add that to the list. What's your favorite reread? Again, leave a comment on Facebook or at hereandnow.org.